NPR.
This is The Indicator from Planet Money. I'm Weilin Wong.
And I'm Paddy Hirsch. Since 2006, member states of the North Atlantic Treaty Organization, or NATO, have agreed to spend at least 2% of their gross domestic product on defence. Many, if not most, however, have consistently failed to spend that much.
Instead, the organization has increasingly relied on the United States, which spends way more than 2% on defense. The U.S. spends about 3.5%, in fact. This shortfall has been noticed by one person in particular.
So the NATO countries have to pay up. They're not paying up. They're not paying what they should. And they laugh at the stupidity of the United States of America.
Former President Donald Trump compounded this statement, which he made last month, by saying that he wouldn't defend a NATO member that didn't pay its way. And in the past, he's made noises about the U.S. leaving NATO altogether.
Trump is, of course, the Republican nominee for president. And given the way he's polling right now, NATO members, which includes most of the European Union, appear to be taking the prospect of American withdrawal somewhat seriously. Recently, Thierry Breton, the EU Internal Market Commissioner, proposed that Europe move to a war economy.
A war economy. That sounds pretty serious. But what does the term war economy actually mean? On today's show, we'll find out what European leaders are thinking about when they talk about a war economy, what the barriers to creating a war economy are, and what a more robust European defence industry might look like for Europe and for the US. That's coming up after the break.
This message comes from NPR sponsor HubSpot. More to-dos, less time, and an infinite number of tools to keep track of. Doing business has never felt harder. But you don't need a miracle to hit your goals. You just need HubSpot, because their all-in-one customer platform can make growing your business infinitely easier. Imagine this: higher quality leads, fast closing deals, wildly happy customers, and more benchmark-breaking quarters. It's not a miracle. It's HubSpot. Visit HubSpot.com to get started today.
Support for NPR and the following message come from W.W. Norton & Company, publishers of The Road to Freedom, Economics and the Good Society by Nobel Prize-winning economist Joseph E. Stiglitz. The Road to Freedom is essential reading for those committed to the American ideal of an economic and political system that delivers well-being, opportunity, and meaningful freedoms for all. The Road to Freedom, available now wherever books are sold.
Support for NPR and the following message come from Jarl and Pamela Mohn, thanking the people who make public radio great every day and also those who listen.
When I hear the words war economy, it conjures up images of old newsreels from the 1940s, you know, those ones hailing the recruitment of women for manufacturing jobs and, I don't know, warning about rationing.
It's a wartime dish and not rationed. An appetizing mixture of soft roes and baked spuds in their jackets. Watch how she prepares the dainty snack.
The dainty snack? I'm intrigued.
Spuds. Spuds are a dainty snack.
But when European leaders urge a shift to a war economy, as they have been lately, they're not really harking back to 1940. They're not talking about rationing, at least, or dainty snacks. Rachel Ziemba is a senior fellow at the Center for a New American Security. She says it's all about shifting supply chains.
War economy footing means trying to reduce exposures to shortages of key commodities, energy, power generation. It's about reducing the risk of politically motivated supply chain disruptions.
More than anything in the EU's case, though, it's about building out Europe's defense industry. What EU leaders want is for member nations to ramp up domestic arms and ammunition production.
They also want to boost joint weapons procurement, where the EU would club together to buy stuff rather than each country buying for its own military, as they mostly do now. But the EU has a long way to go. Europe is highly dependent on the US for its protection right now.
Yeah, not only do the majority of European members of NATO not spend as much on defense as they've agreed to, when they do spend on defense, they mostly buy American. Mallory Millington is an independent consultant specializing in international relations, global security, and defense. He says Europeans simply don't make that much defense stuff themselves anymore.
In the 30 years since the Cold War ended, European countries have basically
slowed down not only their defense capabilities and their own militaries, but their industrial capability to produce bullets. And it's not just like a tap. You can't switch it back on.
Switching it back on would be expensive. Thierry Breton, the European Internal Market Commissioner and the bloc's de facto defense chief, said he wants to set up a 100 billion euro fund to revive the European defense machine. That's like $110 billion. It's a lot of money. But for Europe's leaders, the plan that comes with it makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, it would be a good thing for Europe to be less dependent on the US for its security. It would present a more united front against Russia than at present, for one thing. And then there are other actors to consider. Mallory Millington notes the example set by Houthi rebels, who continue to disrupt shipping traffic in the Red Sea.
The world is not getting safer and is going to continue to not get safer. And for Europe at the moment, Russia is the big threat. But Russia isn't the only threat. You know, you've got the Houthis, and every single non-state actor with a couple of million dollars has just watched what the Houthis have done and is paying attention to the amount of damage they've been able to do.
So there's a clear strategic security advantage to Europe becoming more independent of the US, giving it more flexibility in its response to threats and not so reliant on America.
Yeah, there's also a benefit to being able to manufacture your own weapons without having to rely on rivals like China for parts or even entire weapon systems. And then there's the economic upside.
Spending on defense pushes and benefits other areas. Drone technology is massively pushed by defense spending, and that will include improved, you know, microchip technology, all of these kind of things. As unfortunate as it is, arms sales are going to increase. You know, people across the world are going to be buying more bombs and bullets. So the more Europe makes, the more Europe will probably sell.
There are good strategic and economic arguments, then, for Europe to shift to a war economy. But Rachel Ziembe says that doesn't mean it'll be easy.
It's a lot easier said than done, and even saying it faces a series of challenges just because of member state divergent interests.
Yes, Europe is not a nation. It's a collection of 27 member states, and getting them to agree and coordinate on anything is notoriously difficult. One example of the EU's struggle to agree and coordinate on defense? The money.
Yeah, remember that 100 billion euro package that Thierry Breton proposed?
That's $110 billion.
Yeah. And after careful consideration, the European Commission came up with a slightly lower figure. Are you ready for it?
Tell me.
1.5 billion. Just a little lower.
Yeah, just a wee bit lower.
Mallory Millington says money is a big sticking point when it comes to moving ahead on creating a war economy.
Europe economically is not doing great at the moment. And given the state of interest rates across the world, borrowing is much more expensive than it has been previously. There's not enough money for it to be purely government-side spending. I think the big challenge will be getting commercial and industry businesses on side to kind of take part in this, because there isn't enough money in the coffers.
Getting different corporations on board from different countries could be challenging, Mallory says. And the picture could be further complicated by internal politics in member nations.
The other problem is the rise of the right wing that we've got recently, which is the pro-Russia right wing in Europe. You already have people like Orbán in Hungary, who is anti-NATO, pro-Russia. You have Erdogan in Turkey, who delayed Sweden and Finland's entry into NATO by months. And so these kind of figures could really throw spanners into the works of European coordination in improving its defence.
All of that said, a shift in the European stance on defense may be inevitable. The threat from Russia is real and has concentrated minds in the EU. And Rachel Ziembe says pressure from the US is not going to let up.
At the end of the day, various US administrations have been pushing Europe both to spend more and differently on defense and also to use more tools to protect their supply chains.
She says that inevitably a Europe more self-sufficient on defence will have a different relationship with America. Right now, when Europe spends on defence, it spends more than 60% of its money in the US. If Europe rejuvenates its own domestic production capacity, that will change things.
There could be more trade disputes between the US and Europe. No matter who is the president next year, I think we'd see more trade tensions. The question mark is whether it just might add competition with the US defense industry.
That's a lot of barriers. Money, bureaucracy, national and international politics, trade.
But despite all of that, it does look as though Europe is set to go ahead with its plan to move to a war economy. With Russia showing no signs of letting up on its territorial ambitions, there's a lot at stake.
If you want to hear more stories on defense, The Indicator had a whole series on the topic recently. You can find all three episodes, including mine, in the show notes.
This episode was produced by Cooper Katz McKim, with engineering by Josh Newell. It was fact-checked by Sierra Juarez. Kate Kincannon is our editor, and The Indicator is a production of NPR.
Imagine a house where every room follows a different architect's plan. Doorways don't connect. Staircases lead nowhere. Lost Patients is a new podcast examining our complicated system for treating psychosis, one that loses patients to an endless loop between the streets, jail, and hospitals. We'll ask how it got so bad and how it can get better. Listen to Lost Patients from KOW and the Seattle Times, part of the NPR network.
This message comes from NPR sponsor American Express. Take your business further with the smart and flexible Amex Business Gold Card. It's packed with benefits that help unlock more value from your business purchases. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard. Support for this podcast and the following message come from Humana. Employees are the heartbeat of your business. That's why Humana offers group dental, vision, life, and disability plans designed to protect them. Exceptional service, broad networks, and modern benefits. That's the power of human care.